Okay, this is April 13th, 2011, Skype class in Hilo, Hawaii.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari, Gopi Janabama Girivara Dari, Gopi Janabama Girivara Dari, Jasodana Brajajana Ranjana, Jasodana Brajajana Ranjana, Jamuna Tira Chari, Jamuna Tira Vana Chari. Jayam Vishnu Bhad, Swami Mam Sapari Vajagacharya, Tasha Shishi Mata Divine Stacy Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupad Ki Jai.
Jai.
It's the founder of Jaya Srila Prabhupad Ki Jai.
Jai.
Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shri Kahor Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Purvinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Gangamai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.
Hari Bol.
Oh, glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare
Krishna. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare
Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Namaste, Saraswati Deve, Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvana, Paskachade, Satani. Vandeham, Sri Guru, Sri Yuta, Padakamalam, Sri Gurun, Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam, Sagrajatam, Sahagana, Raghunatham, Vitam, Sam Sajivam, Sadvoitam, Sadvadutam, Parijana, Sahita, Krishna, Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha, Krishna, Sahagana, Lalita, Shakam, Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev in the Presence of Lord Krishna, Text 11. Panduputram upasinam.
Panduputran upasinam.
Ashraya prema sangatam.
Ashraya prema sangatam.
Abhyachastam uragastrayar. Andibhutena chakshusha.
Andibhutena chakshusha.
Panduputram upasinam.
Panduputran upasinam.
Ashraya prema sangatan.
Ashraya prema sangatan.
Abhyachastan Uragashrayar.
Abhagashan Uragashrayar.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Andibhutena Chakshusha. Panduputran Upasinam.
Panduputran Upasinam.
Ashraya Prema Sangatam. Abhyachastan Uragashayar.
Abhyachastan Uragashayar.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Panduputranupasinam.
Panduputranupasinam.
Prashraya Prema Sangatan.
Prashraya Prema Sangatan.
Abhyachastanuragashair.
Abhyachastanuragashair.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Can you please add Radharani Ramananda? She's trying to get on.
Yes.
Panduputran upasinam.
Panduputran upasinam.
Prashraya prema sangatan.
Prashraya prema sangatan.
Abhyacha tanuragashrayar.
Abhyacha tanuragashrayar.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Andibhutena Chakshusha.
Pandu.
Pandu.
The late father of Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers.
The late father of Maharaj Pandu and his brothers.
That's actually interesting, because usually if there's a name, Prabhupada just gives the word for word as the name rather than an explanation of the person. So that's interesting. Putran.
Putran.
The sons of.
The sons of.
Upasinam.
Upasinam.
Sitting silently nearby.
Sitting silently nearby.
Prashraya.
Prashraya.
Being overtaken.
Being overtaken.
Prema.
Prema.
In feelings of love.
In feelings of love.
Sangatam.
Sangatam.
Having gathered.
Having gathered.
Abhyaschascha.
Abhyaschascha.
Congratulated.
Congratulated.
Anuraga.
Anuraga.
Feelingly.
Feelingly.
Ashray.
Ashray.
By tears of ecstasy.
By tears of ecstasy.
Andibhutena.
Andibhutena.
Overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
Chakshusha.
Chakshusha.
With his eyes.
His eyes.
Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. Report.
Now, can we repeat the sloka?
I never do that.
Okay, no problem. Then everybody who's on mute, we have a lot of devotees. If everybody on Skype could please kindly mute yourselves so that there's no interruptions with background sound. Thank you.
When Maharaj Pandu, so now Prabhupada's giving an explanation in the purport as to why Bhishma Dev was so overwhelmed just to have his grandsons, of course they weren't actually his grandsons, his biological grandsons, sitting nearby. Purport. When Maharaj Pandu died, his sons were all small children, and naturally, they were brought up under the affection of elderly members of the royal family, specifically by Bhishma Dev. Later on, when the Pandavas were grown up, they were cheated by cunning Duryodhana and company. And Bhishma Dev, although he knew that the Pandavas were innocent and were unnecessarily put into trouble, could not take the side of the Pandavas for political reasons. At the last stage of his life, when Bhishma Dev saw his most exalted grandsons, headed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, sitting very gently at his side, the great warrior grandfather could not check his loving tears, which were automatically flowing from his eyes. He remembered the great tribulations suffered by the most pious grandsons. Certainly, he was the most satisfied man because of Yudhisthira's being enthroned in place of Duryodhana and thus he began to congratulate them. Pandu putram upasinam kashraya prema sangatan abhyaschastan uragashraya andibhutena chakshusha. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feeling. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. So here we see that Bhishma, who's one of the Mahajanas, who's a pure devotee of the Lord, who's in the presence of the Lord, is feeling overwhelmed with affection for some other jivas. And we see the word here is prema, anuraga. Prema and anuraga, words that we normally associate with love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this brings up a very important question. Does being a pure devotee of the Lord mean having exclusively prema and anuraga for the Lord? Does it include having prema and anuraga for other living entities? Often we think that Krishna consciousness means becoming detached from affection. What to speak of love? What to speak of anuraga and prema? We often think like that. I become attached to Krishna. I become detached from my feelings of affection for all living entities. So sometimes we think Krishna consciousness is that, in which case this verse doesn't make any sense. We have Queen Kunti asking to cut off her tie of affection for the Pandavas, the same persons for whom Bhishmadev is now feeling prema and anuraga. What is this mystery? Then there are others who say, no, Krishna consciousness means that one has the same love for all living entities. In fact, they'll say that having love for all living entities, especially for the devotees, is one of the keys to advancing in Krishna consciousness. So what is the actual situation? All of us are surrounded by so many living entities in our lives. Some of them to whom we have very brief association, we pass by them in the post office or on the street or in an airplane while we're doing our shopping. Others with whom we're very intimately associated as our close friends, as our family members. And all of us have family. I suppose if you're an orphan brought up in the street, you don't have family. But let's assume everyone has family. We all have at least our mother and father. Most of us have brothers and sisters. Those of us who are married, we have our spouse, we may have our children, we may have our grandchildren, uncles, aunts, cousins, our persons. And so this is an important question for us. We hear how Arjuna's bewilderment on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was Swajana, his attachment to his people. Jana means people. Swajana, my people. And yet here we see Bhishma Dev is overwhelmed with affection for the Pandavas. Now, if we turn to something else very significant that involves Bhishma Dev, again, it seems to give us the opposite. And this is, and let me see if I can actually, perhaps I can even put it in your chat window, and then you can see this verse for yourself. Of course, I have it here with diacritics, and it may show up a little different in Skype. Please excuse me for that. I'm going to put it here. Hopefully it went.
Yeah.
So this is a verse that Prabhupada quotes in the Madhulila 23.8. It's found in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 142. Prabhupada references it, not with exactly the same words, in the Nectar Devotion. It is Ananya Mamata Vishnu Mamata Prema Sangata Bhaktir Ityuchate Bhishma Pralad Odhava Naradi. So we find the name Bhishma is mentioned here. If we look at the word-for-word translation, Ananya Mamata. Mamata means your mind. This is mine. Ananya Mamata. only you are mine. No one else is mine. You are the only one who is mine. Vishnu in Lord Vishnu or Krishna. Mamata, again, the sense of ownership. Prema Sangata, endowed only with love. Translation, when one develops an unflinching sense of ownership or possessiveness in relationship to Lord Vishnu, or in other words, when one thinks Vishnu and no one else to be the only object of love, such an awakening is called bhakti by exalted persons like Bhishma, Prahlad, Uddhava, and Narada. Prabhupada, in referring to this verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, says when all one's feelings of kinship are reposed in the Lord. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something very similar. Janaka janani daipatanai prabhu guru patituhu sarvam. Janaka janani, my mother, my father. Daipatanai, my lover, my son. Prabhu guru pati, my master, my guru, my husband. You are all of these. In another song, he says, you are my brother. You're everything. Whatever kind of kinship we could think to have, whatever kind of relationship we think that we could have, all the varieties. Krishna's everything. He's everything. He's all of those relatives when all of one's feeling of kinship. And he's the only. He's the only. The only one. All right. Then again, we go to Raghunath Das Goswami. So, again, I'll try to put this in your window. If it works. So we have Raghunath Das Goswami in the Manashiksha saying that one should develop intense, unprecedented love for our guru, for Vrajabhumi, for the people of Raj, for the Vaishnavas, the Brahmanas, the Gayatri Mantra, the holy name, and the Radha and Krishna, the young couple of Raj. So he's including here three categories of people. Four, if you want to count guru. So four people. Those who are our spiritual master. One of my friends who's doing a meditation on this verse said that she realized she has at least 15 spiritual masters. So spiritual master, in fact, in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, yeah. Krishna talks about guru as plural. So one spiritual master. The people of Raj, that includes both the eternal residents of Raj and the people who live in the earthly Raj. The Vaishnavas, because there may be many Vaishnavas who don't live in Raj. The Brahmanas, this refers to people who are not yet on the level of Vaishnava. They're saying love. Intense, unprecedented love. So here we have what appears to be an opposite example. All right, well, let's go back to this, to try to solve this mystery. Let's go back a little bit to this purport. Prabhupada's giving us some background information as to what's going on here. So we'll just briefly flesh out this story a little bit. So Bhishma Dev is the son of Santanu with his wife Ganga. All of Bhishma Dev's older brothers died at birth. And when Santanu prevented the death of Bhishma, Ganga took Bhishma away from the earth to the higher planets. In the meantime, Santanu remained without a wife and child. When Ganga returned Bhishma, then she left, and Bhishma and his father became very close. Bhishma was installed as the heir to the kingdom. However, Santanu then fell in love again with Satyavati. Prabhupada says he should have been thinking of how to get his son married rather than thinking about how he could take on another wife. But instead, anyway, he fell hell over heels, madly, irrationally in love with Satyavati. He couldn't discharge his duties of the kingdom. But Satyavati's father said, I don't want my daughter involved in a situation where there's a stepson who's going to be the king. It will be a political problem. And it probably would have. So Bhishma vowed not to become the king. And then Satyavati's sons, Chitrangada and Vichitravirya, would have become the king. Chitrangada died. Vichitravirya became the king for a very brief time, and then he died. Santanu, by that time, was already dead. So there was no king. Bhishma ruled the kingdom without the title of a king. And Vichitravirya's two wives were impregnated by Satyavati's son before her marriage, Vyasadeva. This produced Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Dhritarashtra was born blind. Pandu was born very pale with not such good health. Because Dhritarashtra was blind, although he was the oldest, Pandu became the king. Pandu had two wives. Because of a curse, he couldn't have children with them. His children were then born through other persons in his wives. They were born specifically by demigods. However, Pandu did try to approach his younger wife for children, at which point he died. This left then the Pandavas, who were five of them, considered the sons of Pandu. They were not biologically the sons of Pandu. It left five brothers without a father. It left again the kingdom without a king. At this point, Pandu having been the kingdom should have gone to his oldest son, Yudhisthira, but Yudhisthira was just a young boy. So Dhritarashtra, the older blind brother, became not exactly the king, but he was holding the throne until Yudhisthira could come of age. Because he was blind, Bhishma was actually still running the kingdom. Dhritarashtra had his own sons, Duryodhan and company, as Prabhupada refers to them here. And Dhritarashtra was very attached to keeping the throne. He did not want to give the throne to his eldest nephew. And his son, Duryodhan, also had this mentality of being very attached to the throne. So Duryodhan engaged in many activities to try to kill the Pandavas, to try to cheat them, to insult them, and so forth. Now, Bhishma had raised his half-brothers, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada, after his father died. He had raised Dhritarashtra and Pandu because they were born, they were conceived even after the death of their father, and Vyasadeva was not involved in their upbringing. And then he had raised Pandu's sons after Pandu died. So just see what kind of an involvement he'd had in the family. So he had raised the Pandavas, he had raised their father, and he had raised their grandfather. Just meditate on that for a minute. If you had raised somebody and then raised his sons and then raised his sons, that was the situation with Bhishma. That was, and when you raise someone as your child, if someone's your biological child, you raise them naturally, you have some affection for them. And what to speak of if the child you're raising is yours because their parents have died or their father has died, they're left helpless in the world. So there was some natural human relationship there, which Srila Prabhupada is explaining. Then beyond that, Bhishma could see that Yudhisthira was the proper person to be on the throne. We explained this in another class, that Yudhisthira was going to guide people towards Krishna. So it wasn't just that there was some relationship established due to service, and it wasn't just that there was some bodily connection, but although I guess we could say really there wasn't really any genetic connection. But it was also that Bhishma Dev saw that Yudhisthira was the right person, whereas Duryodhan was very demoniac, very much opposed to Krishna, very selfish, very envious. But because of political intrigues, Bhishma couldn't get involved. So now imagine that. Imagine that you have someone, you've raised them, you've raised their father, you've raised their grandfather. They're a pure devotee of the Lord. They're piety incarnate, Dharmaraj, the son of Dharma, the son of Yamaraj, the epitome of the person who establishes justice and righteousness in the universe, not just material righteousness, but bhakti. And you see this person who you groomed from childhood, whose father you groomed from childhood, denied of his rightful place due to politics. So I'm sure we've had some experience like this in our lives, where we've been in some situation where we see that the person who really should be in the leadership position, the person who's really a great personality, is denied that position due to politics. But we see some injustice, any kind of injustice that we see in our life, and where that injustice is hurting people's Krishna consciousness, where we see that there's someone in charge who really shouldn't be in charge. People are being damaged. Their spiritual life is being damaged. Their spiritual progress is being damaged. So this is what Bhishma was seeing for so many years. And I'm sure we've also been in situations like that where we really couldn't effectively do anything, where for whatever reason we were powerless to change the situation, we were helpless, we simply didn't have the ability, we didn't have the voice, we weren't in a position where people would listen to us, we weren't in a position of political power, or we had some other service that in order to do that other service, in order to do that properly, we couldn't get involved in the situation, that getting involved in the situation would hurt our other service. So Bhishma had an important service because Dhritarashtra wasn't properly able to do his duties, and Bhishma had to do them, and therefore he had to work with Dhritarashtra. It put him, his one service to the Lord compromised his other service to the Lord. He wasn't able to do both. So this happens even to the great devotees. It happened to Mother Yasoda. Mother Yasoda is giving Krishna her breast milk, and then the milk boils over on the stove. She had to choose which milk for Krishna is she going to take care of. She couldn't take care of both simultaneously. So we can imagine Bhishma's anguish at seeing a situation which was not favorable for his beloved Lord and not being able to do anything about it. And finally, here at the end, you know, everybody would like that when they die, that the things they most desired have happened, the things they've desired for their whole life. So this is what Bhishma is getting. He's seeing at the end of his life that Yudhisthira is going to be on the throne. And so therefore he's feeling great love and affection, prema and anuraga. So that's the story behind this that Srila Prabhupada is telling us. So Krishna consciousness, we see, is full of feeling. Bhishma Dev here has a lot of feeling, prema, anuraga, full of feeling. Well, let's look at this for a minute, see if we can understand this, and then we can see if we can apply this. So when we think of feeling, when we think of love, we think of affection in this world, we think of it in terms of seeing jivas as separate from Krishna. This is my son, this is my grandson, this is my brother. This is my mother. The problem of this is that if we try to go from love of my brother to love of Krishna, it doesn't work very well. We were studying this in Ishopanishad, the analogy of the disconnected hand. So if my hand is cut off from my body, then whatever I give to that hand will not benefit the whole body. It just doesn't work. Right? If you have a severed hand and you rub lotion into it, it doesn't give any pleasure to the body. If you put food in a severed hand, it doesn't give any pleasure to the body. So our concept of loving other jivas in a mood of being cut off from Krishna, in a mood of rebellion to Krishna, doesn't give pleasure to the whole. And therefore, it doesn't really give pleasure to us. No, I'm the disconnected hand, and if I am trying to do something for my fingers, those for whom I have affection, it doesn't give me any pleasure either. Because the only way I as the hand can feel pleasure is when I'm connected. The pleasure center is coming from the brain, not from the hand itself. The hand has no capacity to feel pleasure if it's disconnected from the brain. Therefore, if I have a mood, of course I can't be disconnected from Krishna, it's not possible. But if I have a mood of being disconnected from Krishna, if I have a consciousness, if I have a vision of being disconnected from Krishna, then however I try to give pleasure to myself or to those who have some connection with me through family, through affection, through whatever, there's no satisfaction really for anyone. Not only for me, but for others. And I'm sure we found that. I'm sure we found, you know, you really try to make your wife happy. You sacrifice so much to make your wife happy. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. And even when it works, it doesn't stay. It doesn't stay. You try to make your wife happy in a big way. You buy her a house for $300,000. And she's happy for a week. And then she wants a new kitchen. And then she wants this. And then she wants that. And sometimes even after you buy her the house, she's still not happy. And this applies to all of our relationships, whether it's with other humans, whether it's with animals, whether it's with our country, whether it's with our employer, We're not able to make these other jivas unlimitedly, constantly, ever-expandingly happy. In fact, many times we're not able to make them happy at all, even with our best endeavor. Nor are we always able to make ourselves happy. We have brief, fleeting moments of partial happiness. A drop of water in the desert is the analogy. So that we have experienced, that doesn't work. Trying to have love for ourselves, trying to have love for other living entities, going from part to whole, doesn't work. Doesn't work. The other thing we experience, materially speaking, is that our so-called prema and anuraga in this world is not exactly that. You know, there's people who say, I love you, I love you, I love you. And we find out they don't really love us. They really want to use us for their own purposes. How do we know that? Because as soon as we don't do what they want us to do, how they want us to do it, when they want us to do it, they become angry. They become frustrated. Their affection for us is not the same. They'll say, well, maybe I should just cut off my relationship with you. And sometimes they do. And we find we also feel like that. If I think I have so much love for someone, when that person acts in a way that's very displeasing or very upsetting, so my feelings of love become hampered. And I think, I don't know if I want to have anything to do with this person anymore. So that is the problem of lust masquerading as love. Those are our difficulty. And it is those things from which we need to become detached from. We need to detach ourselves from so-called love that is really selfishness. So-called love. That means we have to recognize it. It means we have to be able to recognize, oh, this is not real love. We have to become detached from that, totally. Indifferent. Not disgusted. Disgusted is another kind of attachment. But indifferent. Ugh, who needs this? I don't need it. It's not attractive. Like it's some, like some rotting food. No, who needs it? Not needed. Something I have no interest in. However, real love is something different. Real love, if I love Krishna, I love everyone. Why? Because Krishna loves everyone. Suridam sarvabhutanam. Surit. If I love Krishna, I love those who Krishna loves. How can you say I love someone, but I don't love who they love? Therefore, it said in the seventh canto, the wife should be very affectionate toward the husband's relatives. You say to your husband, well, look, I love you, but I can't stand your brother. I can't stand your sister. Or what to speak if you go to someone and say, I love you, but I don't love your child. I mean, try establishing a relationship like that and see how far you get. Right? I know as a teacher, if you ever had to say anything negative to a parent about their child, it was your relationship with them didn't go very far after that. And that's hard because when you're a teacher, you have to say sometimes negative things to people about their child. But the point is, if you love Krishna, you love everyone that Krishna loves, and that happens to be everyone. And real love is I'm doing what pleases my beloved. I'm doing what pleases my beloved rather than what pleases me. Instead of trying to use that person to please myself, I am sacrificing myself to please my beloved. So that is the nature of real love. Therefore, the devotees of Krishna, they do have love for other living entities. And they especially have love for those living entities who are also loving their beloved. So if you're married to someone, you need to show affection to all of their relatives, but especially you're going to be affectionate to their relatives who also have a loving relationship with your spouse. If you see, oh, someone else is pleasing the person that I love, then I also love that person. That's Radharani's view. Radharani is always trying to get, of course, sometimes she displays some so-called jealous anger because there's some fun in it, that Krishna seeing people are fighting over his love out of affection for him. That's another thing. But Srimati Radharani, she's always trying to bring more and more and more devotees to associate with Krishna. And she's happier if she sees Krishna happy with somebody else than she is if Krishna's just with her. And all of the gopis, they're happier to see Krishna with Radharani than they are to enjoy with Krishna themselves. Because they're thinking Radharani gives Krishna the greatest happiness. So that's love. Love is that even if you cheat me, even if you leave me, even if you lie to me, I still love you. Even if you don't do anything for me. Again, the highest example of this is the gopis. What does Krishna do for the gopis? In this world, a woman who loves a man to whom she's not married is the greatest fool. The man doesn't take care of her. But Krishna, that love for Krishna, it's the highest love. Krishna, what did he do for the gopis? Nothing. He's not giving them a home. He's not giving them children. He can't even give them any social position. You know, you like to go someplace with your handsome, accomplished husband and introduce him. This is my husband. He is the CEO of IBM. Right? You can't show him off. You can't even show off the things that Krishna gave you, right? Radharani's so embarrassed if someone catches her wearing a necklace that Krishna gave her. As Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Samhita. What do they get from him? Actually, they get mostly trouble. He's always going off with some other gopi, and then he goes off to Mathura. He says he's coming back in a few days. He doesn't come back. So much trouble. And still they love him. Because all they're thinking about is his happiness. You can't imitate that in this world. You can't actually have an exploitive, lusty mentality and imitate that kind of love. As we were saying in Ishapanishad, you can't imitate the Uttamadhikara. You'll just become angry. If you try to give everything to another jiva when actually your heart is full of lust, and you try to give everything to another jiva separate from Krishna, you'll become very frustrated and very angry. Generally, that other jiva, and sometimes as yourself. But the point here is that the devotee loves Krishna first, from whole to part. So two differences. Material lust is going from part to whole. Spiritual love is going from whole to part. Because I love Krishna, therefore, I love everyone that Krishna loves, and I especially love everyone who loves Krishna. Everyone who loves Krishna loves everyone who loves Krishna. And I love everyone who Krishna loves also. Although my relationship with them is not going to be as intense, because if Krishna loves them but they don't love Krishna in return, then I don't have much in common with them. I can't really have much of a relationship with them other than to try to help them to love Krishna. So that's one thing. And the other difference is that my love for Krishna, and hence my love for all living entities, is selfless. It is actual love. Now, the reason that love, so-called love in this world, is lust, and the reason that my real love for Krishna is love, is whether or not I'm connected. When I'm disconnected, I'm always feeling empty. If you cut off the hand feels malnourished. If the hand is connected, the hand feels nourished. When I disconnect myself from Krishna, I always feel wanting. I always feel empty. Therefore, my relationships must be exploitive because I'm trying to use others to fill my emptiness. When I'm connected with Krishna, I'm automatically nourished. I don't have to make a separate endeavor to become nourished. I don't have to make a separate endeavor to feel that everything I've ever wanted, everything I could desire, everything I need is being given to me millions and millions and millions of times over anything I could imagine. And it's happening to the point that I can forget about my needs. I can forget about my desires. It's as if I have no desires because everything is fulfilled moment by moment, ever expanding. Then my love for all living entities is not exploited because I don't need anything from them. I don't want anything from them. I only want to give. I want to give because my own needs are being fulfilled so far over anything that I require that it's easy for me to give. If we're a poor person, if I have no money, And if I have no money, if I don't even have enough money to eat, then I'm always going to be thinking about how to get money. And if I have some dealings with someone who has money, I'll be thinking of how to get that person to give me something. But if I have so much money that I can't spend it all in one life, even if I spent $3 million a day, then naturally I'd be inclined to give it away to people. Naturally. And my relationships with others would never be based on what they could give me because I wouldn't mean anything. So it's exactly like that. When I disconnect myself from Krishna, I am a poor person. My relationships are not satisfying and they're on the platform of exploitation. When I first connect myself with Krishna, when that's the first thing I do, then I naturally love everyone else who's connected with Krishna and I naturally love in a real way. Well, what do I do with this? So there's two, on sadhana and on sadhya. So how I treat others is part of my sadhana. Therefore, Rupa Goswami gives how I treat others before he gives engaging in the process of bhakti proper. You'll notice that in Upadesha Amrita, Rupa Goswami starts, first of all, I have to be a human being. Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, uttarapasta vegam. First, I have to control my senses. Then I have to take what's favorable and what's unfavorable. I have to get my own life in order. I have to be enthusiastic, confident, patient. I have to give up over-collecting. I have to give up talking nonsense. I have to give up association with devotees. Then what's the next thing? The next thing is my relationship with the devotees. The six exchanges of love. How I'm dealing with other living entities. Then he talks about how you can tell who's Kanishtha Majjhima and Uttama on the basis of their advancement. Then he says how you don't tell on the basis of the body, although we still have a lot of people in the Hare Krishna movement who think it's on the basis of the body, which is interesting. And then he talks about getting a taste for the holy name. Then he talks about having a taste for the holy name and the essence of all advice is to constantly hear and chant the glories of the Lord. And then he talks about entering into Radhakund. So it's as part of our sadhana to have proper relationships, at least with the devotees, and to come to the platform of Majjhim Bhakta, where we have proper relationships with all living entities. The Kanistha Adhikari, as we were explaining in the Shapanishad, doesn't know how to treat other living entities. So this is a very important part of our sadhana. Without doing this, we cannot approach Krishna. If any of you grew up with brothers and sisters, you know the parents are not happy when the brothers are fighting. My mother used to sing a song actually it's from the Bible, how wonderful when brothers are sitting together in peace. Right, so I'm here visiting my son who has 8 children. And when the children are playing together nicely, it's so wonderful. And when they're fighting, it's so horrible, so disturbing to deal when the brothers are fighting or their sisters are fighting. Actually, the sisters don't fight too much. Or when the brothers and sisters are fighting. So disturbing. I was sitting here first. No, I was sitting here first. He's kicking me. He's punching me. I was playing with this toy first. So disturbing. Oh, no, everything's disturbing. So this is an essential part of our sadhana. It cannot be neglected. Cannot be neglected. And the instructions for this are given by Narada to Dhruva. You can say, oh, it's so hard to treat others nicely. But Dhruva, he was a Kanistha. He had material desires. He had envy towards his stepmother and stepbrother. So many disqualifications. So many disqualifications. And he told Narada, he said, I'm not qualified to take up the instructions that you've given me. What was the instruction Narada gave him? This is for our lives. Narada says, it's in the fourth canto. Narada says, when you see someone who's superior to you, instead of feeling envy, feel jolly. So if we can think for a moment, how do we feel when we see that somebody is better than we are at something? When we see that someone got the position that we wanted to have or that we feel we're better at doing, why is that person doing that service? I could do it so much better. Why is that person getting that praise? Why is that person getting that service? They have so many faults. They have so many this. They have so many that. How do we feel? Instead, to feel jolly, to make a conscious effort to feel jolly. Oh, how wonderful it is that so-and-so is getting that service. How wonderful it is that so-and-so's got that position. How wonderful it is that so-and-so's getting that praise. How wonderful, how wonderful, how wonderful. And if someone does something better, that jolliness can also become an inspiration for us to do well. My oldest grandson said to me, said, Grandma, since you've been here, you've been cooking fancier meals, because he also cooks a few times a week. He says, you've been cooking fancier meals than I cook, and I feel inspired now to cook nicer things. I said, yes, that's the kind of competition and envy that's there in Golok Vrindavan. Oh, somebody is serving Krishna better than I am. Let me also increase my service to please Krishna. No, no envy. Just sweet, loving competition, jolliness. Oh, how wonderful that devotee service is. We can make a conscious, intentional effort to do this. Indeed, it is part of our sadhana. Next thing is when somebody's an equal to us. So what's our tendency when someone is equal to us is to brag, either in our mind or out loud. Right? Oh, I found this really nice thing. Well, actually, you know, I'm the one who found it first. Some way we try to talk about our position or to think about our position, to put ourselves ahead of them, to say something nice about ourselves, to say something that glorifies ourselves. So-and-so's doing nicely. Oh, I'm also doing nicely. Didn't you see what I did? So instead of that, whenever we feel the tendency to brag, instead to have friendship. Just friendship. And then meditate. What does that mean? To be a friend. Just be a friend. To share with each other. To exult in the other's accomplishments. Sharing. So to those who are superior, we feel jolly. To those who are equals, we share. And what about those who are lower than us? Who are younger than us in bhakti? Who are younger than us in age? Some situation where we have some authority over somebody, or we feel we know better than someone, the tendency is oppression, to put them down, to make them feel bad, to make them feel stupid, to use our superior position as a way of trying to control them, as a way of trying to force them. Instead, compassion. To meditate, what is compassion? What does that mean to be compassionate? To know when a person is really receptive to what I'm going to say, not to force what I'm going to say on an unreceptive person. To say things and do things in a way that the person feels it was their own idea. I read a story like this of a person who's working for some charity organization where they had a really good way of dispersing charity, but they didn't have a really good communication system. And he had an idea for how they can improve their communication. He brought it up at the board meeting. And the board members were so happy. They started talking about the idea as if it was their idea. And at first he felt offended. He said, oh, wow, they took my idea and they're trying to say it's their idea. And then he thought for a minute and he said, oh, that's my success. They now think it's their idea. So real compassion for people is if we can help them in such a way that it comes from their own heart, that they discover it, that they think it's their idea, not that, oh, yes, oh, great and powerful one, I have now understood the wisdom of what you have to say, and I am going to do what you want me to do, and thank you so much. Or if they don't do it, we can go and say, I told you so. But we want to act as a catalyst, as a facilitator, to help them discover truth for themselves. Srila Prabhupada was expert, absolutely expert, at saying things and writing things so that you went, oh, yeah, that was right. Wow. And it becomes your own truth. So instead of envy, jolliness, instead of bragging, friendship, sharing, instead of oppression and overlording, compassion, respect, respect. Therefore, the third verse of the Shikshastika, Trinada Peace, Amanina, Amanadena, Kirtaniya, Sadahari. Before you can come, same principle as Nupadishamrita, before you can come to a taste for chanting, before you can come to surrender of Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundari, Amanina, Amanadena, that genuine respect for others. Oh, it's so hard for us to respect others. So. To respect another person's right to say no. To respect another person's space, to respect that other person has insights and feelings and hopes and dreams that are theirs. That the other person has their individual way of coming to Krishna consciousness, their individual realization. So hard to respect others. To actually respect this is another living being like me, with feelings and desires and realizations. But until and unless we do that, we will not attain the higher platforms of bhakti possible. We will stay on the Kanista platform of pride and quarrel and criticism, which brings nothing but torture to the heart. And on the platform of sadhya, once one becomes actually advanced in Krishna consciousness, then certainly one is kind to all living entities. With great love, like Bhishma, with prema, with anuraga, with loving tears flowing automatically from his eyes. So how to get there? What do we do to get there? And what is it like when we are there? So this is something we can look at from Manashiksha, from Narada's instructions, from the Shikshastika, from the loving exchanges given by Rupa Goswami. And we can take a vow. Bhaktivinoda Thakura suggests taking a vow first for 3 days. For 3 days, I'm going to practice this. I'm going to practice the loving exchanges. I'm going to practice showing respect for others. Respect doesn't mean, oh, you're so great, you're so wonderful. That's not what respect means. Respect means that I treat others as individual souls who have their own free will, their own personality, their own desires. I respect my relationship with them. I respect their openness. The instructions that Narada give any one of these, we can take a vow for the next 3 days. I'm going to follow Narada's instructions to Dhruva, or I'm going to follow Raghunath Das Goswami's instructions in the Manashiksha, or I'm going to follow Upa Goswami's instructions in the Upadesha Amrita about the six loving exchange. And then evaluate after 3 days, how did I do? How did I do? And then try to take the vow for a week, and then for 2 weeks, and then for 1 month, and then for 3 months, and then renew it until it becomes part of me. So that I'm actually acting eventually with the same kindness. And only then will the door open to the higher levels of bhakti. Trinada P verse is the gateway, according to Bhajana Rahasya Bhakti Vinod Thakur. It is the gateway to the higher levels of bhakti. And how wonderful it will be. How wonderful it will be. When I actually have love for everyone on the platform of freedom, where I don't need anything from anyone, where my heart can be filled with love and affection, no matter how I'm treated, no matter what I'm given or not given, because I have my connection with this. So here's the answer to the mystery of why in some places we are told to be detached from all living entities and detached from affection and relationships with others. And on the other hand, we are told that Krishna Bhakti To attain Krishna Bhakti, I must have great love for all living entities. And a symptom of Krishna Bhakti is love for all living entities. And the mystery is to know whether it's part to whole or whole to part, whether it's lust or whether it's love. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We have a little bit of time for some questions, comments, corrections, chastisements, etc.
I found a nice place for Srila Prabhupada to talk at the same point.
I can't hear you. It's distorted.
Oh. I found this nice verse where Prabhupada had said this in a lecture quite similarly. My connection's not good. All right. Maybe you can read it. I sent...
Can you type it?
It's there now. It says, when we come to the spiritual platform, then actual love begins. Mad bhaktim lavate param. He was quoting that from Bhagavad Gita. He says, that love begins. If we can love Krishna, then through Krishna's love, we can expand our love for everyone.
Yes, exactly. But then some people also think, well, that means I have to wait till I'm a pure devotee first. You know, I'm not going to be able to have anything approaching real love until I'm a pure devotee. But you connect with Krishna now, to whatever extent you can connect with Krishna now, and to that extent, your loving relationships will be on a genuine platform.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Mother, I'm sorry. I was muted. Also doing stuff here. That was a wonderful class. Thank you so much. I'll have to say that I'm still a little puzzled here because Queen Kunti, we just read, she said, and you cited that she said, give up my attachment to the Vrishnis and the Pandus. So why is Kunti saying, give up my affection to my family members?
She's talking about giving, so we talked about that there's two kinds of affection. One kind of affection is part to whole, where I'm just loving the part separately from the whole. And where, because I'm trying to love the part separately from the whole in the view of disconnectedness, my so-called love is actually exploitive. The other kind of love is whole to part, where I'm first connected with the whole, and because I'm connected with the whole, I love the parts. And because I'm connected with the whole, my love for the parts is giving rather than exploiting. So in that, if you read the not only the purport to that verse of Queen Kunti, if you also read the lecture, which is in Teachings of Queen Kunti, Prabhupada talks about that what Kunti wanted to cut off was the separate from Krishna exploitive relationship. And what we want is what Prabhupada called soul to soul via the super soul.
Okay.
I mean, I think we all can experience the difference. Just like if you can feel it, you can actually feel it physically. When I have any degree of real connection with Krishna and my relation with others is to help that other person rather than to get something for myself, and I'm starting with my relationship with Krishna, then I can feel both intense love and intense detachment. I'm detached from how that person treats me. You know, we may have experienced this, say, on book distribution, where I'm just so much absorbed that I'm doing my spiritual master's mission. I'm so much absorbed in the benefit of the books. And my dealings with people are just to benefit them, not to get a big score or not to feel that I am the preacher who knows everything. And no matter how they treat me, it doesn't disturb my mood. If they take a book, I'm very happy for them. And if they spit in my face, it doesn't bother me because my happiness wasn't dependent on how they treated me. My happiness is dependent on how much I'm fulfilling my guru's order. So that kind of love for all living entities is what we want to have. And we know what the other one feels like. The other one feels like I've given and I've given and I've given to this diva and they didn't reciprocate with me the way I wanted or the way I expected. And my heart feels tied up in knots and I'm all full of hurt and disappointment and anger. Is that clearer?
Sorry, I was muted. But yes, thank you.
Anyone else?
Thank you very, very much for a wonderful class, Mataji.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's not like we haven't heard these things before, but when you put it in a fresh perspective like this, it helps.
You know who was really expert at doing that was Sadhapuja. Sadhapuja was really expert at taking you're not that body and explaining it in a thousand different ways that you never thought of before. Okay, anything else? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
No, thank you, Mataji.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Krishna.
Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.